You think it's part what?
I caught your maybe.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I got your message.
Ask your mommy.
No, I'm just gonna record our interview just to be safe.
I have read the website of some questions I'm really interested in, and some others I have to let them see what you said on the website because I want to write an article.
Okay. Okay.
First, can you see yourself as
an idealist? An idealist? Yeah, I plead guilty to being an idealist, yeah. I definitely care much more about principles and the ideals than, you know, whatever compromise might be necessary to, at least to advance my own cause. Yeah, yeah, if there's some... Right.
I decided to do 2 hour drive straight across the east side.
Is it here?
Maybe this will work better. I did an interview with somebody from the San Francisco Examiner, and it was on the phone, and I didn't record or anything. And then afterwards in the newspaper, he said that I had spent a lot of time working my way through the Democratic Party. And I've never been in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
So
I think it's important to...
Yeah, so that's fine with me.
So you just say you definitely you think yourself is
an idealist. Yes.
And when I'm reading your pamphlet, your platform, I get the idea that you think that you are smarter than the other candidates. Do you confirm? Do you think, because you say, if you're not clever enough, you cannot read my stuff.
Smarter than the other candidates is, I would say, from the limited evidence that I have, that would be my assumption. But,
What's your limited evidence?
Pardon me?
What's your limited evidence?
Oh, just the three candidate forms that we've had together, I guess that would be the main thing, yeah. At least with Anna. I've also sat with Mr. Haugen for two interviews, and but you know, it could be that I perceive smarter and agreeing with me as, you know, intangible things when maybe they're, I shouldn't. So.
And can you tell me why libertarians in a party choose you? They support you to be on District 14 campaign.
Well, basically we almost might say, well, let's see. There wasn't any other option. There was no one else wanting to be in. Actually, it's interesting. You know, I don't live in the district. And a gentleman, Harlan Harrison, who lives in Belmont, just, you know, a mile from here, Belmont actually is in the district, but San Carlos, which is further south, is not in the district. So my district reaches up and grabs the city of Belmont, and the district to the north reaches down and grabs the city of San Carlos. Hi, Zoe.
She's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And so, but he really wanted to run against the incumbent, Mr. Lantos, in the 12th district. So so even though I live in the 12th district, that was with me, because I actually have always lived and worked further south from here, which is the 14th district. So we actually sort of worked out a swap where he would run in my district and I would in his district. So so aside from that little issue of the two of us trading districts, there there was no people trying to run for the 14. In a sense, like, we almost take turns within the Libertarian Party. You know, we see the running for office as kind of a duty. Some people see it as a chore. I've enjoyed it.
So it's a duty to run.
I think we in the Libertarian Party have a very strong sense of trying to get a lot of people onto the ballot and to give voters a chance in a wide variety of districts to stand up for the idea of liberty. So we put a lot of candidates on the ballot who personally may not be interested in actually running. Maybe they're shy or they don't like to speak, but they're willing to actually put themselves forward for the cause. Mm. Idealism. Mm.
But as I see your ideas, and I think you are much more like you want to send your message out to the voters. Mm-hmm. And so why do you chosen to be an author instead of running into this? Because you know the reality of politics.
Right. Actually, some of the libertarians have asked that very same question. And I do, that kind of thing to a limited extent, with my website. I had a website before I was running for office. But the question I ask back to them is, if the alternative is to not have any option of liberty on the ballot, then, is that really a better situation? So I say, why not do both, is really my answer.
So you're choosing both?
Yeah. Or I think that both should be done, and so if someone's doing the one, being on the ballot and running, and carrying flag in that way, then I think it's fair for them to put more of their energy into that, during the campaign, than to do writing or to do teaching or to do all the things that one might say is another way to get the message out.
Mm. This thing is a little bit confusing. I think Democrats and Republicans, they put people on the ballot because they want to win. But Libertarians think different, that and they don't care. They just let you, give you the chance to send your vote out there. But they didn't actually win all.
I think there's a grain of truth to that, but for example, in my race, the Republican Party knows that Mr. Haugen has no chance of winning, and in fact, party is not giving him, I think, any kind of money or the kind of major support that they do in a race in which they think they have a chance of winning. So there's a certain element in which even the major parties, where there's a safe seat, they'll still put a candidate up to challenge it. I think it comes down to really self-selection by the candidates. If there were a more serious Republican, like, say, Poizner, who was running for state assembly, and he spent, $1.5 million of his own money. Yeah, he's a very wealthy man. If he spent that money running against Representative Eshoo, he would have a much lower chance of winning than if he spent on a smaller district and a smaller race. So that's his choice. So I think that the major parties even also do that kind of analysis, And similarly, we do have sometimes have candidates who are very serious about running. There's some candidates who have, taken a whole year away from their job and try to build coalitions with other third parties and reach out to interest groups, and they are much more practical than I am about actually trying to increase the number of votes. But I'm practical in the sense that I realize that I'm not going to get enough votes to win the office. So I care more about getting the idea out than I care about getting my name out to be. So because in this race, the idea is more important than the name.
Supporters. No matter how many of them, who are the supporters, the profile of the people who support you, do you have an idea what kind of people support you?
That's a good question. Yeah, let's see. I think unfortunately, it may be limited somewhat to people like me. So that would be sort of people who have a background in, you know, technology, perhaps, people who maybe were affiliated with the Republican Party in the past, but who aren't very much into the religious side of the Republican platform. But actually, you know, I've used to think that most libertarians were like me, but the more libertarians I meet, I find out that there's a wider variety of them than I thought. So there's a lot of libertarians who are former Democrats, and then there's some libertarians who are who kind of like every other day are almost like leftist or anarchist, you know, very suspicious of, say, corporations as opposed to not just government, you know. So but in my district, I would say I would guess that at least half of the kind of supporters I would get would be like, you know, fellow engineers, maybe.
Do you want something to
change? No, fine. If they come and ask, you know, I'll buy something. But,
as in the Silicon Valley, the engineers is not a small amount, so there should be quite a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, engineers is of the people who are supporters. Engineers, I think, would be a big slice of them. But the opposite, the other question is of all engineers, how many of them can I expect to support me? And there, I think, it's limited by factors like, one is, have they ever heard of me? Have they ever heard of what I stand for? And, you know, given the limited, you know, media reach of my campaign, that's definitely a major limiting factor. For example, in the Stanford Inquirer, there was an article about my race, but it was just about Haugen and Eshoo, and then they mentioned my name one time in the last sentence, and I don't think they may not even mention the party. They certainly didn't mention any of the things I stand for. So, so any engineer reading that is not going to have any basis for.
And excuse me, Inquirer, you read the Inquirer? It's the Cardinal Inquirer of Stanford.
Yeah, the Cardinal Inquirer.
I wrote that.
Oh, you wrote that paper?
This turn, I will write about you.
Oh, okay.
See, because I follow this way.
Uh-huh.
I think next article will be about you.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought that's funny because I saw the byline. For some reason, I don't remember what the name was, but I thought it was a man's name. But
it's a Chinese name.
Okay, I didn't. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm not. I think I will write. And I think you are very interested.
Okay. Great. Oh, so you saved the whole article for me. So that's good. In a sense, you're saving the better life.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Well, then it's good that I didn't write an angry letter complaining about the album. Because that's fine.
And also, I would like to know, except for engineers, what the other people, students or just engineers?
You know, I would like to think that students and young people are good prospects for the libertarian message, especially, you know, because I think young people are more socially liberal than their parents' generation, and also young people have economic self-interest in stopping the kind of intergenerational theft that their parents' generations are, you know, doing to them, you know, with all the debt that they're putting on them. But so that's what I would think. But of course, the reality is that the young people, to the extent that they get involved in politics at all, they tend to be economically left of center, I think. And I think that's just a mistake. I think it's basically a certain amount of ignorance, you know. And so there's not much I can do. I try my best to let them know, you know, what's being done to them by the older generation and by the major parties. But I think young people will nevertheless skew Democrat, you know, for quite some time. I think, you know, there's rumblings of change in that respect. Like there's the not the Concord Coalition. There's a group of a political group of people who are under 30, and their main issue is Social Security and entitlement reform. I forget the name of them. Yeah, I think students, maybe economists would be another very tiny group, but yeah.
And economists.
Well, people who have an economics or academic business background, you know, maybe they would be more in tune with my message because my message really does center on economics, and a lot of people don't understand economics. So
you mean free markets?
Right, the idea that markets can do things more efficiently, and that you don't need the government to that if the government tries to do something, it's usually going to do it wrong or do it less efficiently, and that it's going to cause trouble because special interests will capture that government program and then twist it, you know, to do the wrong thing.
Mm. Yeah. And it's very interesting that in your paper you have listed Democrat Party opinion, actual opinion, Hogan opinion, Republican opinion, but there's no Libertarian Party opinion. So
yes.
You just omitted all.
Actually, if you on that page, if you go to the very bottom in the fine print, I explain why I did that, and the reason is that for Escher and Haugen, they may have opinions that are different from their parties that they try to or that they sincerely believe, but either way, that are closer to the Bay Area's opinions than what their party is, but even if that's their personal opinion, when they go to Washington, they're going to be, either in the Democratic side of the aisle, or Republican side of the aisle, and they're going to vote for the existing power structure. So I think it's important for people to see that when they vote for Eshoo or Haugen, regardless of their personal positions, they're very much voting for the power structure that those people will be a part of, that they would be a part of. Mm. With me, if I were to win by some miracle, then I'd be the only Libertarian in Congress, and there would be no power structure that would have control over me. So I would just be one guy, saying what I think, and there would be no party machinery to sort of, move me in a different direction. So so that's what the point I tried to make at the bottom of that webpage, to explain why I think it's less relevant for voters making this choice what my party says as opposed to what the two major parties will actually make their people do.
So in a sense, you mean Libertarian is not so popular?
Well, certainly because they're not in the game right now, they're left out in the cold, and so you can't be partisan unless there's more than one of you. And so there wouldn't be a group that you would be under pressure to conform to. So that's, I'm sure, if there were lots of Libertarians in office, then the same dynamics would affect us just like any other party. But but for as long as until there's a first one, I think it's not as much of an issue.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you support Proposition 52?
No, I think it's very bad. I think it's very bad for third parties, but I think it's also bad in general, just because it's so unclever or just not smart. Because it's so obvious that you can have a situation where, say, there are four Republicans who want to run and two Democrats who want to run, and they all have and say the four Republicans equally split the Republican vote and the two Democrats equally split the Democratic vote, then even if the Democratic pool of voters is smaller, those two Democrats will actually go to the finals and one of them will be the winner, even though there were more voters in the primary who wanted a Republican of any kind. So so the election reform that the Libertarian Party supports is instant runoff voting, in which would have the desired effect of helping moderates, or at least of letting people express what their true belief is, rather than worrying about the lesser of two evils. So instant runoff voting is where you rank the candidates according to how which one is your first preference, your second preference, And for example, in the Nader-Gore case, people who like Nader, but also like Gore, could list Nader first and Gore second. And then when Nader doesn't win enough, he gets thrown out and all of his votes become Gore votes, and so that it would more accurately reflect, you know, the will of the people. So I think that the issue of voting would be the right electoral reform rather than Prop 62. Also, the idea that it would lead to more moderation. You know, we had a similar law in 1998, and so from 1999 until 2002, the entire state legislature and, you know, Governor Gray Davis were elected under this blanket primary system, which is very similar to Prop 62 before the courts threw it out. And yet, it's pretty obvious that during that period, there wasn't any less amount of extremism, you know, in state government. There was still, you know, a lot of partisan gridlock and partisan division. So I'm very skeptical of the argument that Prop 62 would lead to more moderation in our election outcomes. It would definitely silence, I think there's 700,000 third-party voters in California, and none of us would have a choice on the November ballot. So I think it's just very undemocratic.
So what's the purpose behind the Prop 62?
Well, the people behind it, and I'm not going to say they have a hidden purpose. I think their purpose, they claim to want to allow moderates to win primaries, because there is a dynamic that within a party, the extremist has a better chance in the primary, even though in the general election, your party really should be running a more moderate person. So you'll get a situation like Tom Campbell, who's a wonderful Bay Area moderate Republican, was running, I think it was Campbell, but there was some moderate Republican running against a more conservative, example, pro-life Republican in the gubernatorial primary. And Gray Davis actually ran ads in support of the pro-life candidate, attacking the moderate candidate, because Gray Davis didn't want to face the moderate candidate in the election. He wanted to face the extremist candidate, who was easier to beat. And so there is a dynamic in which extremists have a better chance in their primaries. But you know, political parties are groups that are allowed, I think they should have the freedom to choose the candidate they want, and they don't need the legal system to try to you know, squeeze them into picking people that they don't want.
Can you just briefly tell us the history of how you entered the politics?
Yeah, let's see. I kind of gave it in my bio on my site, but I've basically been interested in politics since roughly 1980, around the time that Reagan was running, and around that time I saw on TV the show called Free to Choose by Milton Friedman, our own Stanford Hoover Institute Nobel winning economist. And it's a wonderful series on PBS where he explains the power of markets and how markets much better job as a decentralized system for managing things than any bureaucracy can ever do. And so ever since then, I was kind of a free market Republican. And I always defended the Republicans, because I said that, you know, if the Democrats would just get out of their way, then the Republicans would do the right thing. And then in 2000, the Republicans finally got control, or 2001 actually, finally had full control of the federal government, both the president, the White House, and both houses of Congress. And but when they did that, they didn't do the right thing. They instead, did a bigger giveaway to seniors with the prescription drug benefit, and they did some protectionism with the steel tariffs. So they didn't follow all the free market principles that I always believed they would do if they would just, you know, have the chance to do it. So that's when I just said, okay, you know, these guys have had their chance. I'm going to, you know, they're not doing what I believe in, so voting for them is just going to send the wrong signal to the rest of my fellow citizens. So that's when I started becoming active in libertarian politics. I'd always been interested in libertarianism as certainly as a political philosophy, but as a party, as an organized group, I thought that the best thing to do was to try to make the Republican Party more libertarian. But when it became clear in 2001 that they're actually in the wrong direction, that's when I basically gave up on it.
So actually you believe in the political philosophy of libertarians, but you are not so satisfied with their organization.
Well, one way, as I've said it to other libertarians, you know, I believe in the idea of freedom, so I don't really care about whether you go with the donkey or the elephant or, you know, the Statue of Liberty, which is the Libertarian Party symbol. So I really don't care which party actually delivers on the idea of freedom and the libertarian principles. If tomorrow the Republican Party became, you know, better at being libertarian than the libertarians themselves, then I would switch back to being a Republican. So I'm definitely more interested in, you know, lowercase, you know, small l liberty than in capital L libertarian, as in the party. You know.
Mm-hmm. You just stick onto the idea, it's not the party interesting, it's the idea interesting.
Right, I mean the party is very much wedded to the idea, but if the idea comes first, if the party for some reason, you know, totally changed, like say the Reform Party, that's an example of a party that has no real fundamental guiding idea, and so whatever the different groups that try to take it over can totally, you know, change it, you know, move it into a completely different direction. You have, you know, Pat Buchanan, who's an extreme right winger, but you also had Ms. Bellani, who was a former communist, and they were both, you know, nominees of that party. So it's, you know, it's at least theoretically possible for a party to be hijacked away from its current principles. But the Libertarian Party, I think, is pretty strongly attached to its principles, and so I'm pretty comfortable in the party right now.
How do you run the campaign? I mean, specify what do you do in this campaign experience?
My main thing is I go to the events that I'm invited to. I do the interviews that I'm invited to. I fill out the candidate surveys that are available. I do the Smart Voter and the Democracy Net websites, the wonderful you know, neutral third party websites that are available. DNet, Democracy Net, and as well as Smart Voter. I think there's one called Vote Smart, which has a wonderfully complete quiz. The way to look it up would be the NPAT. That's the name, National Political Awareness Test. It's a test that they give to all candidates, and then they put the results on their website.
Is that what you say Holden didn't fill it out?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I haven't checked. I think he missed the deadline, so I guess he probably still hasn't filled it out, but it's been quite a few months since I checked. But since they had a very early deadline, I'm pretty confident that he missed his chance. And then I'm, you know, in these last few weeks, I'm exploring different options about maybe, you know, sending out pamphlets or printing pamphlets or publicizing things, you know, on the internet. But that's, you know, kind of limited by how much money I'm willing to spend.
Mm. Do you think the internet is a great channel for you to send out your messages?
I think so. I think I'm not sure. You know, it's already a great channel. Certainly, if people, you know, vote the way I do, and I know that I'm not normal, but you know, if people you know are really interested in comparing the choices, their ballot choices, now, you know, with the internet, it's so easy for people to get so much detail. In fact, just last night, one gentleman, a voter, was filling out his absentee ballot, and he visited my website. He saw that I have a little icon saying, you know, you can chat with me online. And so he sent me an instant message, and so we had like a 20-minute discussion, you know. Turns out he works just across the street from me down in Sunnyvale and at Lockheed. And So he asked for a few clarifications about, you know, gun control and Israel and missile defenses. And so after we, you know, he didn't agree with everything I told him, but he said, okay, you've got my vote. So now 20 minutes to get one vote is kind of inefficient, but the idea that people can have more interaction with their candidates and the ideas of the candidates is I think a powerful one, and is only going to get more and more important in future elections.
So do you have this track about how many people did the quiz? And how many $2 you sent out, actually?
So far, no one has even tried to get the money. Mm-hmm. No one has. In fact, I've had two people send me money, saying, you know, I agree with you, and here's some money. And on my website, I get about 20 or 30 visitors a day.
20 visitors?
20 or 30, yeah. And the quiz is very prominent on the front page, so I expect that a lot of these people, you know, see it, or at least, you know, see the idea of it. But it's not a whole lot of money, and so people, you know, it would probably take someone, you know, 10 minutes or so to actually, you know, follow the links and answer the questions. So, you know, not too many people, I think, are going to take the trouble to mail in the answer. I mean, the other possibility is that people go to take the quiz, read everything, and then say, "Hey, he's right," and then they don't, and then they decide they're going to vote for me, in which case they're no longer eligible for the money. So, but I'm not naive enough to think that I'm getting 20 new voters a day. Probably. Yeah. Probably not likely.
And a little question, maybe just interested in me. What do you mean the Chinese liberalization?
Basically, China has had this, you know, wonderful economic liberalization, you know, in the last 20 years or so, and but politically, it's still, you know, like a one-party system,
yeah.
And there's very tight limits on free speech, and so. So I would, you know, would like America to do whatever it can to encourage, you know, the Chinese government to liberalize their political world, just as they're liberalizing their economic world. But I'm very optimistic there, because I think that, you know, I think prosperity inevitably brings democracy. So as long as they're doing the economic liberalization, I think the political liberalization will follow.
Yeah, but it's like very difficult growing, like sometimes up and sometimes down.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting. You know, maybe there'll be a generational change within the party. You know, and whether the new generation maybe will, you know, be more interested in relaxing control. I'm not sure. And then of course the whole Taiwan situation is scary.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to hope that because all the people are Chinese, they're one people, that they would never use nuclear weapons on each other. But, you know, the old men who run, you know, Beijing, maybe they just see this as a personal insult or something. So I do worry about the Taiwan situation.
Mm-hmm. I would like to expand this topic, but I think maybe next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
yeah, because actually, I'm always, you know, interested in what Chinese people's perspective is on the China and its government, and especially its division with Taiwan. Because I think, you know, back during the Cold War, you know, anyone who got out of a communist country, you could sort of count on them that they were against the government, you know, the communist government that was still there. But now, with you know, with the forward steps that the Chinese government is making, somewhat, I kind of sense that there's you know, there's certainly a lot of, you know, Chinese, you know, pride that maybe makes people have a more positive view towards the communist government than they otherwise might have. And so like even with my Chinese, you know, coworkers, sometimes I can't tell whether they're pro Taiwan or pro Beijing.
Taiwan, I think the mainland people was pro Taiwan.
Right. So even
but
so
they just disagree with, even we just want Taiwan back, or we just like this situation of separation.
Mm-hmm.
I think nobody is really pro-Taiwan because we don't know them a lot.
Right, so it's been so long, the division.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
oops. That's okay.
Sure. Yeah, because it's... And I'm not even, I mean, I don't really understand what it would mean for, you know, to have Taiwan back because, like, you know, Hawaii, you know, America sort of has Hawaii, but it's still its own state. They have their own government, they have their own elections, you know, and so I'm not sure what, you know, what the mainland would really, would actually do differently, you know, if they did have Taiwan versus not have Taiwan. But, so I wonder if it's mainly just a pride thing, or is it are there actual things that they think Taiwan is doing to hurt mainland people, or that they would do differently to mainland, I mean to Taiwan people? I'm not sure.
I think pride is not that important, but I think if Taiwan is independent, the government will face Tibet problems because Taiwan will be an example for Tibet. That will be a very important.
Interesting. That's a good point.
And also we have like Xinjiang and other provinces which are quite different from the other parts. So they don't want to set an example for them.
Oh, for people to break away. Now, is Taiwan ethnically similar to the coastal main central regions of Taiwan, or are they, because like Tibet is very different ethnically.
No, Taiwan
right?
is quite close.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
People here, but they just don't want them to.
Sure, that's understandable. I'm not sure, it may be not fair, because, you know, certainly, you know, as a libertarian, I believe that, you know, that people who want to be free, you know, in their own independent country should be allowed to be free, and that would apply to, you know, Tibet or Taiwan or, you know, any other group. I mean, certainly San Carlos shouldn't be allowed to leave America. You know, you need to be kind of, you know, your own standalone unit. But but it's understandable that, you know, countries that historically have had big empires like Russia, you know, when Chechnya wants to leave, you know, they don't like it, even though most of the people in Chechnya probably do want to leave. And so it's... It leads to, you know, some big problems.
We don't have the foundation of like independent state. That's very different.
So it's much more, yeah. So it's a much more centralized structure. Yeah. So it is hard to change, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, I like the idea of decentralization, because it does such a nice job of keeping these kinds of pressures, you know, from getting out of control. If the more centralized things are, then the more dangerous it is for, you know, instability. And that's one of the things that you know we see in America, is that more and more functions of government are centralized to Washington. And while I don't think we would ever, you know, have wars or anything within America for, you know, for regions to try to break away, for the same reasons that it's bad in other countries, would make it bad here too.
I know what you are worrying about.
You're doing a good job of keeping your views, your opinion secret, as a good reporter should.
What are the main problems?
Are you going on a train?
Are we going to? Well, she might go on a train after she's done. I don't know.
I'm sorry. Do you have to?
Oh, you're trying to catch the next train?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't get to come on a train.
No, I could wait for another train. And what are the main problems do you think facing District 14?
I think the biggest problem facing District 14 is also the biggest problem facing the rest of America, which is the entitlement problem, where by which the government, the politicians, and you know, selfish voters have conspired to put you know, $94,000 worth of debt on Zoe, and another $94,000 worth of debt on Shannon, and each of them never got to vote on this, but they already owe the money, and they're going to have to pay it back. And so luckily we're in a fortunate district where I think none of our local problems are anywhere as near as big as the national problem.
And just give me an idea, who has endorsed your candidacy?
Basically, just the Libertarian Party would be pretty much my only endorsement. I did send out an email to most of the, as an experiment, to most of the faculty of, is it Santa Clara University? I can double check with you which one. It's either Santa Clara University or San Jose State. One of them, I think it's Santa Clara. Yeah, Santa Clara. They have an economics department that is full of free market libertarian kind of guys. Some of them are even so. So I sent an email asking, you know, for their endorsement, and one or two of them, only a few responded. And the ones who did, one or two of them said that I'm not extremist enough. That I need to be more, you know, against all forms of government and all forms of taxation, and so that he really couldn't give me a full endorsement.
So they urge you to be extreme.
Yeah, they wanted me to be, well, like one of them, for example, has written papers saying that that voting is a waste of time and that it only endorses this corrupt political system, and that we should, and that people who really love liberty should boycott all voting. So I don't agree with that. So after I got that sort of, you know, reaction where I sent out about 15 emails and got like maybe four responses, you know, one guy said he moved away. But I got, you know, zero, you know, clear, full endorsements. So then I decided, okay, it's probably not worth my time to go seeking more endorsements. So, yeah, endorsements haven't been a big part of my strategy.
So it's mainly your own money to run the candidacy.
Yeah, yeah. And I because there's a $5,000 paperwork threshold, mm-hmm. I've always been planning to limit myself to no more than $5,000 or to $49.99 or whatever. But so far there's no danger of even coming close to that yet. So. Actually, I did try to send out get one other endorsement, but it was such a half-hearted effort. Cypress Semiconductor is a company in Silicon Valley with a CEO. His name is T.J. Rogers, and he's very famous as being, you know, for libertarian ideas. And in fact, for a particular brand of libertarian ideas that's expounded by the late author Ayn Rand, A-Y-N Rand. And so so I went to their website, and they have a little form where you can type in a comment to the company. You know, so I just put in a thing, you know, I said, you know, to CEO Rogers, you know, and I said, I actually in the comment I said, if you go to my website and still won't endorse me, then I'll give $100 to whichever of my opponents you like better. So, but I'm sure the email, the little comment form probably never got to him, or if it got to him, it was thrown away by his secretary, or I don't know. So, I haven't heard back from Cypress Semiconductor about that. Yeah.
Do you have friends who can be called politicians? Do you make friends with them?
None of my existing friends are certainly have political, you know, are involved in, you know, professional politics. Some of these guys, these libertarians that I've gotten to know, are pretty serious about their politics, but I think they still, since they don't make their living at it, it's hard to call them politicians. But I have found that my two opponents are quite friendly, and so
they are friendly.
Yeah, they're very nice when I've interacted with them. Chris, Mr. Haugen, now we've been together for five different events, you know, three forums and two newspaper interviews with the editorial boards, and each time we got along well. In fact, I was trying to make sure that he doesn't agree too much with me. There are a lot of cases where he was saying I agree with what Brian said, and so I have to then try to point out the differences between the libertarian perspective and the sort of Christian Republican perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, do you think the problem you say about the American politics is because the different ideas or the theories, or because of corruption and the party band? I mean, which is more?
I think ideas, and I think I'm a minority in that, because people get so cynical, and people so easily say that, you know, any politician who you don't agree with, they must just be corrupt, or they must be selling out to special interests, or that kind of thing. But I think that's wrong. I think almost every politician, you know, believes in the thing that they stand for. They maybe think that they need to make tactical compromises to achieve a greater goal down the road. And I think there is a tendency for that kind of thinking to slowly and subconsciously, you know, make them make too many compromises. But I think there in American politics, there's so much people complaining about that kind of phenomenon, and there's not nearly enough complaining about the actual voters themselves and their corruption, because it's the voters who reward politicians and their behavior, and it's the voters who have been very happy to go along with, you know, putting $60 trillion of debt onto future generations. So I would blame the voters as much or more than I would blame the politicians, because the politicians can only do what the voters let them do, and in fact, they only try to do what the voters want them to do. So I think it's more about, if there's any corruption, it's the corruption of the voters more than the politicians.
Yeah. But I heard in the debate you say that you don't like the spy votes from the voters.
Yes.
Do you think the politician's problem or the voters' problem is in buying?
Right. So I in fact...
Okay, for your hot chocolate, we can't collect the cash. We just...
Yeah, okay. Okay, I will be very quick. Can I use my credit card? Permanent credit card?
$1.50 credit card? I don't think so.
Actually,
I have.
Okay. Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, I've got a lot of these. I got a lot of $2 bills that I haven't used yet. So,
No. They should be saved for the
vote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me just.
Yeah. So, I think in that forum, what I said, buying votes from voters, from selfish voters or corrupt voters. I forget which one I said. Mm-hmm. And so it's true that. Now, I doubt that Representative Eshoo thinks of herself as going out and just buying votes in that sense. But I think the phenomenon is that she gives benefits to people that she thinks deserves them, and she probably thinks of it as, you know, just a fortunate coincidence that her doing what she thinks is right results in people liking her and voting for her. So, similarly, if you talk to the kind of seniors and other middle class people or students who vote for, you know, politicians who promise student aid, everyone who wants these kinds of benefits thinks that it's for the greater good of society as a whole, and they don't think of it as, well, this is for me, and giving this to me, you know, involves taking from the rest of my fellow citizens. Mm-hmm. So I think the people all think of themselves as doing the right thing, mm-hmm. even when they're not. So that's the kind of corruption that I would that I talk about, as opposed to the kind of, now I'm sure there are people in special interests who are just blatant about, you know, wanting to take money for themselves and not caring. But I think that's a minority problem. And that, if we could solve the bigger problem of the subconscious corruption, the other kind of corruption, you know, is easier to fix, and it's actually a smaller problem in dollar terms.
So you think, from your experience of taking this campaign, you think it's quite clear the candidates are good and the process is very good, and you are an ideal politician? Not like most people say it's ugly or complicated?
No, I think there's the rules are more complicated than they need to be. So there's plenty of rules that you know, as far as reporting requirements. Well, I think there should be the only rules should be reporting requirements. You know, as long as the flows of money and the possible flows of favors in return, as long as these are all public, then I say put the information in front of the public and let them decide. So But I do think that politicians, I think the process, you know, corrupts them, but it's in a much more subtle way than what people always talk about, you know, with corruption. Because there's just so much complaining in American politics that, you know, that they assume that every politician is consciously corrupt and cynically corrupt. And I think that's wrong. I think, and they think that the politicians' views follow the money, but really what happens is that the money follows the views. When you as a politician take a stand, then the pool of money that's available for people who believe it then comes to you. And so it looks like they're buying your vote. Now, unfortunately, there isn't a pool of money for my beliefs, but so it looks like these people's vote is being bought, but it's really just that there's a limited number of available positions for politicians to take, and each position has got an interest group who supports that position, and so when a politician takes that position, the money of that interest group will go to that politician, and I think that can confuse people and make them think that there's more corruption than there is.
So this idea came out when you actually entered this campaign, or before, you think the same way?
No, I thought the same way.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So do you think the politics is quite clear?
I think it's clean of the kind of conscious vote buying and the blatant corruption that people so easily allege. I just don't see that. I don't see it that way. I think the there is a certain amount of corruption, but it's mostly subconscious, and it's equally the fault of voters and politicians.
Mm. Okay. My last question. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion about your opponent, Eshoo and Cole?
Well, Eshoo, I've only been on the three forums with her. She's very nice. I think she's very confident in her re-election. So confident that my compliments to you, as said on my website about your article. You were the first reporter who's actually gotten her to refer to any of her opponents, because you asked her about Haugen and his charges. And in all three of our debates and on her website and anything I've ever heard from her, she's never mentioned even the fact that she has opponents. So, which, you know, maybe if I were so far ahead, maybe I wouldn't mention opponents either. So so she is she's basically a Democratic machine politician. She gets half her money from political action groups, and so she's pretty standard in that respect. Mr. Haugen is an interesting case because he in one of our interviews at the San Mateo Daily News, he called himself a libertarian religion, and but he's also kind of a Christian fundamentalist. And so he's definitely a libertarian in the economic sense, and also he and I agree very strongly with the principles of federalism. So the two of us find a lot of common ground there. Where we differ strongly is on moral and religious issues. He believes that there's a much bigger role for religion in public policy. And I'm a libertarian and an atheist, so I don't see the role at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you are different. You see them mainly the difference of your opinion.
Right. Yeah. I think that they're both honest and they both want the right thing to happen for the country. They it's just that I think they both have the wrong ideas.
In your opinion.
Each of them is half wrong in their ideas. Chris is wrong about his, social ideas, and Anna's wrong about her economic ideas.
Okay.
So if I could cut each of them in half and glue the right halves together, I would vote for that candidate. But since we can't do that, I have to run.
That's also the opinion you say about Democratic. You
have exactly.
The representative of each
state. Exactly, yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for talking.
Oh, no. 55 minutes, but it was fun.